The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
First, the panelists are going to introduce themselves. That's easiest part of the talk.
Okay.
I'll go first, but I'll just do a short introduction, and then maybe I'll do a longer introduction, depending on...
Go for it.
I'm Ian Kelling, and I thought of this talk because it was a talk I would like to hear, and I've been to many Libra Planets. I work at the Free Software Foundation. We don't usually give talks as FSF employees at Libra Planet, because we really want to hear from all of you, from the community, because you are the free software movement, not us. We're just trying to help it along, you know. And what was I going to say? But I knew some people over the last year who did some job searches, and I thought, you know what? I could get them into a panel. And one of them dropped out. And so we've got two official panelists. I thought I would recruit some more, but I got busy getting Libra Planet.
That's good.
So now I want to make some of you, and maybe the IRC, some honorary panelists, and have a bit of a discussion and sharing of thoughts and stories. So I'll pass the mic because I've been talking too long. So next up, Ruben.
Okay. Well, I'm Ruben Rodriguez. Can you raise little? Test. Okay, that's good. Ooh, a little less. There. Okay. So my name is Ruben Rodriguez. I was at the Free Software Foundation with Ian until a couple years ago, and I guess that's why I'm here, because recently I started looking for a day job, and so I was a senior sysadmin at the Free Software Foundation for a few years, and then I was the chief technology officer. And I'm also the founder of the Driscoll Project, the talk I just gave a few minutes ago. And currently I'm spending most of my work time on the Driscoll Project, which has some funding, but to kind of keep that funding for other people, I'm looking for other jobs. So I started looking a little bit. And that's enough for now.
Yep. Good. Good. Thank you.
And pass it along to Bandali.
Bandali.
Oh.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. We hear you. We see you.
Yeah, you look awesome. Like Big Brother there on the screen.
Oh, gosh. Well, hello. I'm Amino Bandali. I'm a free software activist, software engineer / developer by day. Yeah, I'm a GNU volunteer and also an FSF volunteer. That's what I do.
Okay.
And yeah, I did. I went through a job search sort of, I guess, mid last year, which sort of took until the like fourth quarter. So pretty fresh still. So I guess that's one of the main reasons I'm here.
Great. And, a little more introduction about both of you, which is that, Ruben, you live in Spain, right? Oh. So you have about a infinitely more experience with the job market and jobs in Spain than I do. That's just a fact. Yes. Okay. And I mean, you live in Canada, right? So you know more about the job market there, right? Okay. And I live in the U.S. Sure. I have my whole life. So that's just some more relevant information as we start talking. It'll colors our background and our history.
Yeah, that's a good point. I bet that when Ian was thinking about doing this talk, that you wanted to hear some horror stories. Was that part of it?
Hey, yeah, if you want to tell a horror story, that's a good one.
I haven't looked for jobs very often. I'm very privileged that way. But since recently I did look for it, and I do have kind of a horror story. I thought it would be fun to say. So I applied for a job at a free software, for a foundation in the free software realm. And, I sent my application through a form, through some, recruiting website, and I didn't hear for a while. And, I really wanted to get at least interviewed and get to talk to the people to see if this was a good fit. And I started to get a little nervous and started to write to people, and I wasn't going anywhere. And my friends were like, oh, if you really like this job, they have it published on LinkedIn. You should make an account there. I'm like, I don't want to make an account there. And I resisted. And then I bravely gave up and made an account. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do this thing. And then if I get the interview, I'll just remove the account. Anyway, I spent like a couple hours making the account and polishing it and pulling all my work history in there. Like, I'm betting that most people, how many people have done this? Okay, all right, almost everybody. So then I started to the whole point is to show the people you know. So you start connecting with other people, and I asked my friends, why are you not connecting back with me? I connected with all my friends and nobody accepted me. And I was like, what do I stink? What's happening here? And nobody had gotten I had gotten shadow banned immediately. It took 20 minutes flat from creating the account to getting shadow banned and going nowhere with this attempt. And, it's because I'm currently staying in Spain, and that broke some automated flag that flagged me as some potential spammer or something, because my work history is in Boston and I'm in Spain, and that didn't match. And I immediately got flagged, and I had to get in touch with LinkedIn service and figure out what's going on. And they told me, oh, it's because your IP is from Spain. And okay, can you fix it? Nope. Okay. What happens if I cancel my account and then I start over? It's like, well, you can. It's probably going to be blocked again. But anyway, I got a little bit of advice from them, and I made an account again that didn't get blocked. And it shows that I'm listed from Spain. And I got immediately in touch with a recruiter that way. It took like hours. And it makes me as happy as it makes me mad that I had to do it, and it did work right away. So something is wrong here. I don't know exactly what happened. My suspicion is that my curriculum didn't trigger some automated filter by some machine. I didn't use the right magic words or something. And going through LinkedIn and talking directly with somebody through LinkedIn actually got me through. And that's my horror story.
Okay. And once you got your LinkedIn account, and you contacted what happened? You contacted this foundation?
A recruiter that had published the job that I had previously applied to months before and got nowhere. The moment I tried through LinkedIn, then it was an immediate getting it going situation, which now I realized, don't take this as a promotion of LinkedIn in any way. I'm not happy with that being the situation.
Yeah. So you're saying, but this is a fascinating anecdote, because you think, here is a foundation that has many published things saying that they care about free software. They have a form that is more free software friendly than LinkedIn. I'm sure
their own thing.
Right. That form on their website to take a job application is like, it's running a minimal JavaScript. It's not malicious JavaScript,
It may not run anything.
May not even run any. And then, it gets nowhere and he has to go and give his data that which is going to get monetized to Microsoft because LinkedIn's owned by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And he has to go give his data to advertisers to get through to this company. And only then do they start talking to him and get the job application process rolling. So it can, finding a job while, so that was a sacrifice you made. You don't regret doing that because
I don't know yet.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll tell you if I get the job.
Yeah. Right. But that's the type of sacrifice of your freedom and your data that I think everybody who cares about software freedom and goes and looks for a job is faced with because, it really sucks, so good story. Thank you.
But again, as far as horror stories, mine is nothing. I know that for sure. So I want to hear other people's horror stories. Amin, do you have any?
You don't have to. We don't have to talk about horror stories anymore if you don't want. I have a lot of other topics we took cover.
Go for it.
Right. That's fine. Let's see. Like, I do have a little bit of a story, but it's, again, still nothing. And especially, it's been less than like Ruben's case. So I've sort of done two major job searches in the past 2 years. And in, I guess, both cases, I did end up, the first case, I made a LinkedIn account, unfortunately. And in the second case, I also made an Indeed account, which is another, I guess, job search that might be more popular up here in Canada, a job search site, which similarly to LinkedIn, unfortunately requires running non-free JavaScript in the browser. But I guess the good part, luckily for me, is I actually never got to uploading all my data to in either of these two cases, because by the time I reluctantly made my account, I did like my job applications did go like forward. So I basically deleted my account right away. So I guess I'm very lucky that way.
Good. I missed a tiny bit of that. It's hard to hear with a. I wonder if we could rotate it slightly. I don't know if it would help. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay.
You wanted to go walk.
Yeah. I caught most of it. Okay. So, quick question from the audience. What are some questions, quick questions, things you would like us to talk about or you would like out of this talk? Hold this. Anybody? Let's do it quickly.
I heard that people want to know what the FSF staff is doing to create a revival of the job bulletin that you have in the website, because it seems to be that. And I know that this is probably one of them. I wanted to mention it, but one of the things is, as an institution, maybe the FSF should be directly in contact with some of the organizations saying, I want you to open this space. Because, for example, what you did with the licensing agreement, when you have these certification credits, I don't know who did it. I just still don't remember who did it, but something of that similar. That was very good at the time. I thought it was, I participated, but I didn't need them, but I thought it was a really good, attempt.
Good question. Anyone else?
Is it true that software development has changed forever because of the pandemic, and now it kind of doesn't matter where developers live? They live all over.
That's a good one for me.
Good question.
So say you're offered a job where you can exclusively work on free software, and that job is Microsoft. What do you do? Or even the worst, like, if there's a worst offender you can think of, what do you do in that case?
Good, great question. All right. Anyone else? Okay.
I guess similar to the last one, a bit about SaaSes, because the job market for people who work on software as a or server as a software substitute related things, and specifically like people trying to lock in other people, is that's basically most of the software industry at this point, as far as I can tell. So how do you choose to work in that kind of environment, what, like, can you do so in a way that's uncompromising? And if so, like, how do you work for change within that or not?
Great question. Oh, okay. One more, and then I'm going to answer some of these.
Okay. Are there good job boards to look for, especially if not FOSS software, at least partially ethical?
Good question. Okay. All right. Oh, back to...
Quick answer to the job boards. If you are part of the hiring process, you can reach out to the address on the job board and pay a very small fee in the scheme of things to put jobs on our job board. Also, more unofficially, on the member form, most of your FSF members, you can have more informal discussions about free software jobs that you've found organically. I also want to toss into the discussion, where do you draw the line for a free software job? Is kernel code ethical to you? Is using a Windows or Mac laptop acceptable if you're only working on free software? Where is that line?
Okay, some good questions. All right, I'm going to talk a little bit, and then I'm going to give it up to the panelists to talk. All right, hold this, and if anyone wants to interject, you know.
You have to say, but actually.
right. Okay, so I heard two questions about how do I find jobs, free software-friendly jobs. That's an easier one. It's a more simpler one than the ethical question, so I guess I'll tackle that a little first. I have a list of job boards, about 7 of them, and that I will post to the slides of this talk within the next week. And that's one thing. The other thing is, you have to look around. I think there are a lot of small companies that, even still don't make it to that job board, those job boards. Like, Bendali worked at Savoir-Faire, working on, what is it? Jammy. And, I don't know where they posted their job, but it's like a small company making GNU software that's free software. And so it's hard sometimes to find those jobs because there aren't a lot of them. And you have to, look for them. And then you have to keep an eye on these companies like the Free Software Foundation. You know, I was following them for a long time. They made their job posting, but I learned about it because I was on their RSS feed, right? And
in terms of a kind of practical, like where do you can go to look. So for example, the FSF doesn't publish on LinkedIn, but they published on Idealist, which is where most nonprofit organizations would go publish their jobs applications. So that's a good place to start. They don't have a lot of tech openings that don't tend to appear there that often, but they do appear. Like the FSF tech openings are on Idealist, and that's a more well-known, like established job-seeking place for the American market. I bet that changes by country.
Yep. Another tip I would say is look at every presentation at FOSDEM. A lot of them people work for companies that are, and a lot of those people care about free software,
These events.
Yeah.
They're a good place.
Look at every speaker on events like, LibrePlanet too. Yeah. Every speaker at LibrePlanet, see where they work. And see what their companies are doing. So, yeah. And about the FSF job board, free software job board, I'd love to if it got more postings, but, it's a paid job board service and we can't, tell everybody pay us money and pay our job board. So it's a different beast than the certifications and that's a tough nut to crack. So I'm not sure if we'll really be able to make it into a big, great thing, that will solve everybody's problem. Okay. I think we can move on from this topic unless you got something to add, Bandali.
I guess I'll just quickly mention the site fastjobs.net. That's one of the things that I run into last year when I was looking for jobs. There's actually a decent amount of or a decent number of job listings pretty much entirely in free software in there. So that's pretty useful to know. I had no idea and I didn't know what to search for or look for until someone told me the name. So yeah, fastjobs.net, that's a good one. I've seen hostings from a bunch of different like startups, larger companies, even like Wikimedia posts. There's like hostings by Wikimedia there. So yeah.
Yeah. And both of those were on my list that I'm going to post up. So thanks for mentioning the two big, good ones. Okay. The other one I just want to say now Other questions were more on the ethical side. What do you do with, companies that are hiring that you're like, nah, I'm not so sure about this company. I'm not sure if I want to work there. To that, one of the first things I want to say is, everybody who's cares about free software and goes out in the job market often has similar experiences as other people, but then they end up having their own unique experience once they land somewhere. It's like, it's not replicable, a lot of it, right? Mm-hmm. So, it's like, I got incredibly lucky to end up where I am. And that's a lot of luck. So, you can't extrapolate from, this person made it, is doing something I would like to do. And you can't just follow in their footsteps. It won't work for another person, So, because it's all about a lot of haphazard circumstances a lot of times, do you agree?
It's a tough world. You mentioned in Spain. Spain has currently a 20% unemployment, and in people under 30, that peaked at 50%. So most of my friends coming out of college couldn't find a job, like as a with a master's in computer science, and that varies by place radically, and at different times and in different fields. But specifically in the if the more you reduce your target, and we are like it's a subset of the tech world, we are like the it makes it a little harder. So that goes into the topics that they brought up about where do you draw the line at. I think we are starting to discuss this kind of in a mix of where is this a hobby and where is this a volunteering and where is it employment, right? And that's that can be tricky sometimes because we'll want to be working in what's our passion, and sometimes if your interest in the realm of free software is very specific, it may be really hard to monetize. And then you may just need to think of that as, well, this is something that I do on the side, but with the knowledge that I gain from it, I may be able to work somewhere, even if it's a different realm. So it's a tricky situation.
Yeah, I agree. Bandali, you have any thoughts about that?
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely very sort of haphazard. There's no sort of, you know, one rule for everyone to follow and land. There is a good amount of luck involved. And yeah, in terms of, I guess, being sort of picky about what kind of job you choose, you know, if you do have the privilege of, let's say, having a job currently, then yeah, maybe you can spend a good amount of time looking for your next, you know, job without having the stress or worry of, okay, am I going to go hungry tonight or like in 2 weeks? How am I going to pay rent and all of that kind of stuff? Or, you know, because you do have the time and, you know, maybe some savings to sort of fall back on if your job search drags long. Or, you know, at least you have a current job, which may not necessarily be the case. And then also depending on the economy, of course, that can vary greatly as well. So, yeah, I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah. All right. So I just wanted to just sort of, hopefully we're all on the same page about the, you know, the overall landscape here a little bit now. Does that make sense to the audience? Show of hands. Have what we've been saying made sense overall so far? Okay, good.
Well, I heard the questions from the audience, but I also would like to hear what's their opinion on this topic. Like, for example, the topic of where you draw the line is the one that I'm most interested in. Like, if you're working on a software company, it can be a very wide range of, I'm working on making a proprietary product to be distributed to the public and be harmful, all the way to, I'm just making software that's used internally by a company. It's not even distributed. That's not free software. It is not free software, but it's not proprietary software. It's private software. This is something that it's not often brought up. Private software is perfectly fine. Free software movement has no problem with a company or a private entity or anything.
In fact, GNU calls it trivially free. So,
yeah. I mean, the company just makes it for internal use. It's not given to somebody. So, that's the majority of software in the private sector is actually just used internally by a company just to run itself. That's the most common form of software. And if you were working on that, there's no ethical problematic to it. Is your software helping less people? It's something you could think about, but it's not harming anybody. So
Right. So if you make a software that the employees use to like track their hours, you know.
I just want to 100% agree with that point that working on development tooling or build infrastructure is pretty great. There's a lot of demand for that, and it requires a lot of deep knowledge and use of free software, and it's a good place to advocate for free software and build internal tooling. So,
yep. So I agree. So. Following up with Ruben, I think that is an excellent first point to make, getting into the discussion of what sort of ethical situation you're getting yourself into is there's working on internal software, and then there's, you know, working on software that is maybe not distributed to the public, but it's actually assisting a company to help distribute their proprietary software.
Like working on private software of a non-profit distributing company, that's what you would say?
Distributor. So yeah, you're working on the build system for Windows. Only Microsoft is building it, but... Okay. But it's certainly helping them distribute Windows.
They probably use Jenkins at this point.
You're working on, and I would say that is, it's becoming more popular. I think I think it's, there's a lot of jobs that are doing that sort of thing. Either they're making software, you're helping indirectly make proprietary software or SaaS services, as that was brought up earlier, or, you're working on a website backend that's distributing non-free JavaScript or different things like that. So I would say those are two cases. It's like internal software that's clearly contributing to proprietary software, or it's internal software that is not contributing somewhat directly to proprietary software. And I would say the one that's not contributing, there's really no problem there. The one that is, I think there's a problem. I was in a job doing that, and I didn't feel good about it. I wasn't sure how I would feel about it when I started, but over time I didn't feel good about it. And but one of the things, so when we're talking about these ethical issues, a dilemma I had, story for me was, I learned about free software when I was in college and started making, learning GNU operating system, learning programming skills. And then I got out of school and I didn't see any free software jobs. And I was like, well, I could, just not take a software job. I could go work somewhere else. I don't really have skills to get a well-paying job anywhere else, but I could do that. Or I could take a job that's, say, contributing to proprietary software as an interim and think, oh, I'll move. I'll go try it out. Maybe it'll be a short time and then I'll see what it's like. Cause I'd never done it before, right? Mm-hmm. I'd never even had a software job. So, oh, sure. Try out a proprietary job and see how it goes. And, then, try and find if anything, it's still helping my software development skills. And then I can use that to find a free software job. Now, that's what I did, but, I fell a bit into a trap which I think most people would fall into in that case, which is I got there and I was getting more money than I'd ever had in my life by several multiples. And I was like, oh, well, this isn't so bad. My coworkers aren't like, bad people. They aren't, they feel like they're helping. They think they're helping people. They're not really thinking. They're just sort of like, free software, they kind of put their blinders on. I don't want to really think about that. I'm not talking about that. That's not an issue for them. Mm-hmm. They just don't agree with it as an ethical issue. And thus they just think they're doing good. They're writing functionality that people are using. I'm helping a billion people. I'm making the software better for a billion people.
Yep.
I'm doing good. That's the mindset in the proprietary software world of a lot of people. And they're getting paid very well to do it. And you're like, what's the adage? It's hard to teach somebody, something when they're getting paid not to think about it,
Yeah.
and so surrounded by those people in that culture, I was, a bit sucked into it and thought, maybe I just, let free software movement have its thing, do its thing, and I'll work on it a little bit in the nights and weekends or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Ultimately, I came to a realization after a while that no, that wasn't for me. But I just wanted to bring up that little story as something that you may face if you're job searching. And I want to just warn other people not to forget about the ethics you may care about now. Don't forget about them. And don't,
It's like migrating your software from proprietary to free. It's not it is a binary thing in that it's software, right? But it takes a progression. The FSF calls it the freedom ladder, but that refers specifically to what you use. But you can apply it to other realms of where software is involved, like the workplace. And you can do a progressive. You just explained your journey that led to end up in the free software work. And everybody usually goes through a journey that doesn't require that they start from it. People would be very lucky if they could always start from the end of the journey, right? But that doesn't tend to happen.
Yep, exactly right. I'll give Bandali a chance. Do you want to say anything about this?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I can, listening to what you were saying, I can sympathize and maybe empathize where, you know, you start a job, you get to work on some pretty cool things. And like you were saying, maybe it's something that a lot of people use. And you're like, okay, this is cool. You know, I'm sort of helping others. Of course, without all the, you know, without thinking about the whole issue of, you know, software freedom, software user freedom. And yeah, you can get sucked into it, relatively easily. And yeah, I was going to add something else, but I forgot. Let's see.
Okay. Take your time. We got lots of stuff to talk about. Just jump in, Mandela. You're another panelist. Okay. We got somebody who wants to speak out of the audience. Go ahead.
Sorry. If you have like a lot to already expound upon, I'll keep it brief. So since the, Free Software Foundation software and licensed products are under GNU and under public license typically. I was wondering and going to suggest that basically public sourcing of funding for software that goes to a public benefit. I know that's a bit controversial because it's not like we're funding Apple.
I got you.
Sorry.
Yeah. Here. It's okay. Yes. Public funding for software. Yeah, that's a great point because, I wanted to bring up that, one of the ways that a lot of people are able to work in free software, without burdens of ethical burdens is that they are able to get an academic job and then they write some software and then they just publish a paper about some of the cool things they implemented, right? Yep. So there's a lot of professors out there who are just really prolific. I think, we got an Emacs, award yesterday and the person who got the award was saying, well, I'm not as good as, Jim Myring. He's a professor. He's for a long time. He just writes free software, writes a paper about it. He's been doing it for like a long time. He's written tons of code and he gets his students to help him. That is one important avenue you could pursue, but, the academic world has its.
It's very small.
It's small
it's
and you have.
Get in.
Yeah, it's very hard to get into. So, I see a hand up there. You want to interject something?
Well, whatever order he chooses. Yep.
Earlier you mentioned about finding jobs on job boards and also from conferences. I want to also suggest that there are mailing lists like This Week in Blank for different programming languages or in projects, and those can also be useful ways.
Yep.
And also, I wanted to suggest fellowships. There are many different kinds of fellowships that organizations offer, and these could be good ways to get into industry or something.
Yep. Okay, so at this point, I want to go back to our question because I haven't answered Greg's question. He's walking out the back of the room. What's going on, Greg?
Oh, I have a second one, but go ahead and answer the first
one. Okay. Let me restate it. Let me see if I got it right. You know, what's the worst company you would work for?
No, it was like, how do you deal with, you actually kind of already answered it. It was like, how do you deal with, somebody who would offer you a job writing 100% free software and who then make Microsoft Windows or something like that?
Yeah. How do you deal with that? I mean, I think that you should not turn your blinders on. You shouldn't, How about Greg? Tell me if this analogy works. You shouldn't go work at the meatpacking factory and press the button that kills the animal just because somebody else was going to push it. It's going down the line. I'm not, it's already at there at the meatpacking factory. You know, I don't have any responsibility. You know, would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, Michael's got a thought.
All right, so I had a job working at a factory deploying GNU Linux onto servers. And the way that I handled it was I kind of kept like a mental tally of how much good was I doing and how much bad was I doing. And if the bad was outweighing the good, then I would leave. That's how I slept at night. So some of them were gray, and some of them were unknown. Some of them were bad, and some of them were good. And I just kind of had to keep a mental track. Like building servers for defense contractors, depending on your take on it, could be destructive. Building servers for hospitals to calculate how much cancer someone has, you can say is good. So I had to kind of balance that, and that's how I approached that particular job.
I have one last thing to interject, which is that there are a whole lot of free software developers who have pages like LiberaPay pages that are making like €5 like a month or something.
Yep.
And run some of the most used free software packages around. So this is just a statement, but like support those people who are trying to make money in that way. Like, it's unbelievable that, for like the critical role some of these packages play, that the developer is making like, €6 on LiberaPay or something. So just be aware of that concept the next time you use, curl or Maggot or whatever,
Yes. I want to second. That's a great point. And I'll just follow up with, an enthusiastic yes to that, because, ultimately, if we want to, the free software movement is about helping you, a lot of it is about, for free software developers, we want free software developers to build the software that users need to live their lives in freedom. And it feels like a lot of times when if you want to seek out the area where users are having trouble doing this in freedom, and you want to go help and develop that, it feels like a lot of times there's nobody paying anybody to do that in the most needed areas. And
yes. There was a panel about I didn't get to see it because it was right before after I have my mic. Yeah. Right before, but you can watch it from when we publish it. The panel that happened a couple hours ago about whether volunteers should be paid for writing free software from the Agaric organization here from Boston.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we need to point out that the context of the situation is, that's kind of how it is right now, and it's not how it should be. It shouldn't be, because the people doing an extremely important good work that is helpful to the free software movement, a lot of them are not getting remunerated for that work. They're not getting paid for the time that they put in, good time and effort, and they do really good work, really valuable work, but then they're not receiving much in return monetarily. That is not, a lot of people online would like to lob criticism at the free software movement to say, oh, it'll never work, because nobody's paying people to do the free software work. So the free software movement is just doomed, And.
Yeah. I think that's false in both accounts, because
there are
many companies and governments and academic places that are investing a lot of money in free software and that keep a lot of people employed. And also, if they didn't, we will still do it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good points, Ruben. I was too, I was too doom and gloom about that. There is a lot of people being paid to write really important free software for the free software movement for users. Okay. And
try to push it to the audience.
Let me finish my thought real quick. And what was the second point you said? And we would do it anyways. I sometimes think of an analogy. Go to a country that's riddled with crime, and crime is, say, a corrupt country. Bribes are normalized. You go there and you tell them, you shouldn't have to, you know, pay that cop to walk past that street every other time you go there. Mm-hmm. And people will tell you, you know, people there will tell you, well, how would the cop get paid? You know, that's how he makes his living. That it's perfectly fine. And that's, I feel like that's sort of the state we're in a lot of times in the world with software. You know, it's like, that's how I do proprietary software. That's just how I get paid. That's normal fact of life. No, we could live in a society that works differently. Anyways, some more questions from the audience.
Not a question, but just something I want to say. So a previous job, on the topic of where you draw the line.
Yeah.
Is okay. It was working on open core software.
Yep.
90% of what I did was free software, with about 10% I'd have to touch the proprietary part occasionally.
Yep.
And getting more money than I'd ever paid before. Pretty sweet gig.
Yep.
At least for a while. It's going to take me some more time to process to tell you whether or not that was a mistake or not.
Yeah.
But if you do something like that and do draw the line short of 100% free, make sure you're paying attention to the conversations going on in management. Because if they're willing to do the wrong thing for that 10% of the time, they're probably going to make some more decisions of doing the wrong thing later on. And I would have saved myself a lot of grief if I would have paid more attention to some of those conversations and saw some more things coming before it got to be more than that 10%.
Yep. Yep, definitely. And one more related thought, which is their RMS recommends a book called The Lifelong Activist, which talks about sort of balancing your activism with the rest of your life, not getting overwhelmed. And I think that is, you know, it's been a struggle for me to find the right priorities and time management. You know, you're trying to save the world and, you know, feed yourself and your family at the same time. It's very difficult. But I don't think that should dissuade people. I think, and a lot of times it can be a bit thankless. And a lot of times other people, they don't, you know, maybe your friends, they might not understand, what you're going through. And, that can be tough. And I just want to put that out there. You know, I have a family. They don't understand a lot of some of my career path or career choices, you know, and that can be difficult. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, you're taking a pay cut in efficiently in you were to work for a private company, the private sector, doing proprietary software. You will be making a lot more than you are. So we have to be thankful to the people that are willing to do that sacrifice for the needs of the movement. And we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. So I think that's a good way to wrap it up, just with really thank you for being at the FSF, which, by the way, we did mention the jobs site at FSF. We can continue to talk about it. We are out of time.
Were we done?
No.
Oh, can we have got one last question, maybe?
It's just a thought, really, actually. I just wanted to expand on your thought on how software is distributed either internally to a company or to the public. There's further distinction to be made whether that software is distributed in a forceful manner where the end user has no choice but to use it, like if they want to register their vehicle or something, versus if it's something that they can elect to purchase at like a box store or something. Not that that really happens anymore with software. So it's a gradient of how evil it is. You can certainly be further to the end of, you know, evil software distribution, or, you know, a little closer to something where that at least the person buying it, or they're making their own choice, basically. I don't know, just food for thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think, you know, a couple quick thoughts.
We do need to.
So we got the keynote, the future of the right to repair in free software, with Elizabeth Chamberlain, next door in Jupiter. If you're interested in going to that talk, get out of here right now. But if you want to keep talking about this, let's keep it rolling.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to go to the keynote. But we mentioned this before, for people that are actually looking for a job, if you go to fsf.org/resources/jobs, there's a short list there that includes three jobs that the FSF has open right now. So you could even apply to work with these guys.
Yep. Yep. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Ruben. And I guess we're going to wrap. Oh, any last words, Mandeli? We could. I told you to interject, you know.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I do agree that it is a bit of a spectrum and a gradient of, I guess, the evilness of both the product or what's coming out of a company, and also the company itself as a whole, which I guess is in a way sort of defined by what it makes or what it puts out in the world. And yeah, like let's say if it were a place like Facebook, for example, I personally wouldn't want to work there even if I was offered to work on like exclusively free software, like only free software, just because I know the sort of things and, you know, abuses of users that they, you know, have done. And that's, I guess, just the tip of an iceberg that's, you know, we've sort of heard and gotten to get a taste of, I guess, you know, being in the public and not being in there, not in the know. So yeah, there's also that. Whereas if it was another company doing not nearly as much evil, and like, you know, offering to pay me to work in free software, I would pretty likely take it. Then again, but that also can be sort of divided into two use cases where, you know, what am I getting paid to work on? Is this free software going to be useful for, let's say, many individual users? Or is it, let's say, something that's going to be mainly used, let's say, in the cloud setting, and like, you know, service as a software substitute to basically take away the freedom of other users? I probably have like different answers to, like, you know, job offers, you know, depending on what sort of thing I would be making for that type of company. So